You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, CKUT.ca on the web. It is Monday off the hour. We are taking over our regularly scheduled programming, which would be En Profondeur, today to do a live update about the encampment on McGill University. My name is Jack. I'm here live in the studio. And we have a whole bunch of updates for you, so let's get into it.
So we just, Radio-Canada just broke a story saying that McGill has a provisional injunction against the encampment, which was deposited at 2 o'clock today at the Palais de Justice. We have some reports that the administration was at the encampment with protesters, that they were chanted off, but essentially it seems like things are escalating. We don't have too much information at the moment, but this is kind of where it seems like things are at.
Yeah, thank you. So,
CKUT is dedicating off the hour to the mobilization on McGill campus and beyond in support of the Palestinian cause. This hour brings to you the sounds of solidarity and hope for a better future. Free Palestine, viva Palestina. The number of tents at the pro-Palestinian encampment on McGill University's downtown campus have tripled overnight, according to university officials. Montreal protesters set up about 20 tents Saturday afternoon with the intent of staying on McGill University lower field indefinitely. What is the latest you have, Athena?
Well, yeah, like I just said, the latest is that Radio-Canada was breaking this provincial, broke the story that there's a provisional injunction. But in terms of where that's at or what's been deposited, I don't have any more updates. But
and we are waiting for some more updates from folks involved in the encampment. So we're really playing it by ear. Please be patient with us so that we can get you the most current coverage possible.
We had hoped to have two professors sitting at the encampment, but unfortunately, in view of the tense situation, they didn't show up. They apologize.
Yes, so I am a student from the encampment, and I just left a very tense scene. The professors that were going to be on were giving speeches in solidarity with students, but what had just the day has been so far very peaceful. It's been peaceful for the past 3 days. The administration came and gave a warning, and the community rallied against them, and we were chanting and making noise, and then they came and gave another warning. And
What kind of warning? What did they say?
They said basically that they said that we weren't allowed on the land, and it was actually very interesting because yesterday we had someone, I don't know which tribe, but from the First Nations come and give us like permission to be on their land. And it was a really beautiful moment, and they put their flag in the ground and they said that they're the only people that can give the permission to be there. And so when they were saying that we don't have permission today, by administration was saying that, people were telling them that we do have permission.
The land doesn't belong to the,
exactly,
to the McGill administration.
Exactly.
Anyhow.
And it's also like semi-public land as well. And it's interesting because there are so many community members. I think it makes it a very interesting situation of who the land belongs to. Is like the students, the public, you know. But so they gave that warning, and then it was very quiet. I don't know. It was very interesting and very weird. And then they gave another and saying that this is our final warning and we, like, they're going to get a police presence involved. So what I just left, there was no police, but there was a car or two that I saw. But the camp is still very going strong, and the community is still going strong, and we're chanting and we're drumming and we're singing and we're listening to readings, and it's still a really beautiful scene. No violence. There's been no violence at all. I've been there day and night there has not been violence, so the emails from McGill are just completely...
Yeah, it was very peaceful. In fact, when Le Devoir went there to have interviews and they photographed a student, and the student had her cat with her.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been so many animals. I was playing with a dog today, and it was like, it felt so nice. And there was another dog with a keffiyeh. So people really, like, it's been a genuine, like, amazing experience, and I feel very close to the community. Yeah,
and in fact, McGill was saying it's not only students, there is also community members, as if community members don't have to show support to the mm-hmm. students or yeah. to be on McGill campus. So I really didn't take this well.
Yeah, exactly. It was super weird considering, like, also school is over. I don't know how that, like, really changes things, but we're not disrupting the school. So I think the community members have every right to be there. And so many community members are McGill alumni or, you know, participate in different ways within the McGill community. Just as, like, CKUT is a community and campus radio, I feel like it really, like, is the way that it is there.
In fact, myself as a McGill dropout, I felt that I also had the right to be there.
Totally. I think everyone, regardless. And there's children there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's, I don't know, I think that the administration can get away with making it seem like it's a worse situation than it is to bring in some disruption and force, but it truly isn't. I was there, like, there was no anti-Semitic, like, everyone knows not to, people are obviously not chanting that. Like, that's not what our goal is. Our goal is to have the university divest and to stop the complicity in the genocide.
And another thing is that, like, with the McGill email, right, it just kind of was this vague. There was a video report, but there was also a Seder yesterday for Passover, right?
Which, so it of kind course, of, they're not going to mention.
Totally.
Exactly. So I think it speaks to how they're trying to manufacture consent for a strong police presence by kind of just saying this without substantiating it.
Yeah, and totally. I think it's interesting that they're so... they use that term of, like, our community, the McGill community, so loosely. Like, when they want to enforce it, the McGill community means only people who are, like, current active students.
Yeah.
When they want to talk about the good work that they're doing and how involved they are in Montreal.
Or donors.
Yeah.
Donors,
then,
yeah.
You know, the McGill community includes everybody.
Right. It's like they pick and choose.
Yeah. They selectively deploy the idea of community. When, like, really, I would like to know who exactly the McGill administration thinks that they're in community with.
Yeah, totally. It was crazy. Like, this is the most community I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what more could be community. Yeah.
There's babies. There's dogs. Yeah,
like,
there's dancing. There's, like,
people from everywhere.
Food, like,
yeah,
tell
it's
me
just
what
not convenient for them right now.
Yeah.
But it seems like if I was them, I would just let the community do what the community wants to do, because they don't want to do anything as harmful as they're saying. Like, you know, it's like there's such a false... And yeah, I was at the Seder yesterday, and it was so beautiful. And there was, like, there's really been, like, a mixture of culture and language. And, like, I feel like I've learned so much from the people around me in the past, like, 3 days. And, like, I've never felt more, like, enriched. It's truly, like, been, and, like, obviously everyone for the same goal of, like, the people in Gaza, you know.
Yeah.
I have here some notes about McGill University for our listeners who are not from Montreal. It was founded in 1821. It's consistently ranked as one of the top universities, both nationally and internationally. It's a world-renowned institution of higher learning with research activities spanning 2 campuses, 11 faculties, 13 professional schools, 300 programs of study, and over 40,000 students, including more than 10,000 graduate students. It attracts students from over 150 countries around the world, and it has an international reputation with over 12,000 international students making about 31% of the student body. Over half of McGill students claim a first language other than English, including approximately 20% who say French is their mother tongue. So a stellar university, but unfortunately there is more to it, and we will come to the investment that McGill makes. So would you like to tell us why the students are protesting? I mean, what are they demanding?
Basically we're demanding that the university divest from, basically they're investing in a lot of weapon manufacturers in Israel. And we want them to divest because we don't want our student, our dollars to be going to, and our tuition to be going to funding the genocide and paying for more weapons for that are killing the people in Gaza. So we're asking them to divest. We're asking them to...
So I have a list of of the demands here. So the first one is to disclose. So it's, we demand full financial transparency from McGill, Concordia, UGM, and UDEM, and the boards of governors to disclose all investments in companies complicit in the genocide of the Palestinian people. Divestment, we demand that Concordia, McGill, UDEM, and UGM divest from all complicit companies and cut all ties with Israeli institutions. Defend, no repercussions or disciplinary charges for any actions taken by students of McGill, Concordia, UDEM, or UCAM in support of Palestine. Any pending disciplinary charges against students related to support for Palestinian activism must be dropped and declare. So we demand that all of the universities publish a statement condemning the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people and calling on the Canadian government to immediately cease all military contracts with the Zionist state. So those are the demands of the encampment. And again, this encampment has vowed to be indefinite, to not leave campus until those demands have been met.
Yeah. So let's listen to some of the sounds of resistance from McGill.
Yeah, give us a quick minute here and we will get those on the air for you.
Yeah, and I urge any listeners, if you want to stop by, you'll hear many sounds of resistance where it's a very musical and like rhythmic place to be. And your support is always welcome and necessary, especially now. Head down to McGill and support your students and your community as well.
Boycott, sanction, and divest.
Welcome back to Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM, CKUT.ca on the web. We are live on air today from the studio on University Street, sharing updates from the popular university encampment that is happening right now on McGill campus. If you haven't heard, it's a coalition of McGill, Concordia, UDEM, and UCAM students who are protesting the genocide in Palestine and their university's complicity and investment in companies that are conducting that genocide. Sama, back to you.
Well, I have here some notes about Concordia University because it started with McGill, but Concordia students were also part of the encampment. So Concordia University, Université Concordia, is an English language public research university located in Montreal, as you know. There's another Concordia, but in Alberta. Our Concordia was founded in 1974 following the merger of Loyola College and Sir George William University. It is one of the three universities in Quebec where English is the primary language of instruction. As of the 2022-2023 academic year, there were about 50,000 students enrolled in credit and non-credit courses at Concordia, making it among the largest in Canada by enrollment. So this was quite a surprise to me. I didn't expect there would be so many students at Concordia, but really during the last years it has expanded tremendously. The university has two campuses set approximately 7 kilometers apart, Sir George Williams, which was the one what we called Concordia at the beginning, and this is the main campus located in downtown Montreal, and the other one, the Loyola campus in the residential district of Notre-Dame-de-Grâce. With four faculties, a school of graduate studies, and numerous colleges, centers, and institutes, Concordia offers 400 undergraduate and over 120 graduate programs and courses. And traditionally, I remember that Concordia was always very active politically, much more than McGill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Concordia has kind of always been known as the more sort of radical of the schools. Concordia also one of those new, very like metropolitan universities that has been set up in a part of a city where it is very difficult to have large quantities of people gather. So something that kind of precludes the possibility of an encampment.
And we also heard that there was students from UQAM, Université du Québec à Montréal. This is a French university, mm-hmm. but the cause is the same. We're here today to support the Palestinian cause.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's been really cool seeing all the universities unite and not, like, because there is power in numbers with this. And so we've had, like, Concordia professors as well. As McGill professors, we have, like, the UQAM tent, which is interesting to see, like, the French and English schools interact because, especially with, like, everything that's been going on in Quebec and the tuition hikes. I feel like there's been a lot of isolation of the universities, but seeing this all come together for the cause and like students from, you know, the different schools with different backgrounds, like it's been really cool to see. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a really historic moment to witness and to be part of.
Shall we take a pause and be back in a few minutes?
Yeah, so
so you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM on the dial, www.ckut.ca on the internet.
And it is about 5:19 on Monday, what is it,
April 29th,
2024. Hard to stay on top of things, y'all. There's a lot going on. Yeah, we're going to cut to some music, maybe, and then we will be back with you very shortly.
I'm not afraid of the dark.
Listening to CKUT 90.3 FM on the dial www.ckut.ca on the internet. Just to have an idea about McGill Investments, Lockheed Martin weapons manufacturer, almost more than $500,000. Safran Military Technology, $1.5 million. Airbus Aerospace Military Technology, $1.5 million. And surprisingly, L'Oréal, 1.5 also. L'Oréal operates a factory in the illegal settlements, Migdal Ha'amek, which is built on the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians from the village. The company markets natural sea beauty products made with Dead Sea minerals. One-third of the Dead Sea western shore lies in the West Bank. Each year, L'Oréal donates annually to the Weizmann Institute of Science, which develops weapons for the Israeli military. Another big investment, RBC Bank, over $10 million. RBC have significant shares in Palantir, a mass surveillance system that provides artificial intelligence tools to the Israeli military for surveillance of Palestinians. These systems circumvent warrant procedures, providing military and police forces with, quote, vast amount of information about civilians. The total list of investments, those that are listed on the website of the SPHR, which is Solidarity with the Palestinian Human Rights, amounts to over $20 million in investments. So those are the investments I believe the students want to McGill to divest from, right?
Yeah.
And there's also a really useful McGill Daily article on McGill's investments that kind of breaks down some of the figures that you were just mentioning. So yes, like there's also significant investments, I believe, in Airbus and Tails and Dassault Aviation Group. And the McGill Daily article says that McGill invests at least $7 million in arms producing and military service companies. So what, just to bring it back to the encampment today, one of the big, two of the four main demands are about disclosing all of their investments, because I think there are maybe $5 million that are not accounted for in this list of what McGill's invested in, and to divest from weapons manufacturers or BDS company or companies that are targeted by BDS, and to not be essentially funding apartheid and funding genocide.
The question that comes to my mind is, McGill obliged to disclose all the amounts? I mean, it's not a public institution, it's not a private institution, but it begs the question, do they have to put on their website all these amounts?
I don't know. I assume that because they aren't, they don't have to. There's an illegal obligation. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a fair demand for students to say, to expect that their university's endowment be, like, the investments be transparent, and to know where the money that they're paying to the university, that the government is paying to the university, to this very public, like in Canada, universities are very heavily publicly funded as well, right? So that's another element here. Coming back to what you were saying about the community, is that as a
we're
public
institution,
we're all contributing, right? Yeah. So I think there's that factor as well.
Absolutely. And you notice that the amounts that are disclosed go to arms manufacturers.
Right. Yeah. It's crazy. And I think a part of the amounts that are not disclosed, it's just begs the question of why, like what could they possibly be hiding that they are choosing not to share, which is interesting because like, they're choosing to share Lockheed Martin. They're choosing to share. So it's like, I don't know what could be worse. But yeah, it's just, it's weird. There's no need for our money that's supposed to go towards our education. And, you know, the education that's supposed to make us better people in this society. Like, and we learn through our classes how, like, to learn from the history and to learn from, you know, what's come before and how our money is just going straight to weapon manufacturers, let alone, like, it's just crazy. I see no need for McGill to keep that as a investment.
Mm-hmm. Like, right. And I think another, just to bring it, tie the two really directly together, Lockheed Martin, for example, provides superior support for the IDF, as it states on its website, and it supplies the IDF with both air and ground weapons, including the Hellfire 9X missile, which was reportedly used in the bombing of the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza. So the fact, like, these companies are very directly involved in the destruction of Gaza. And right now. So it's not like, it's not, this isn't ideological, this isn't symbolic, it's very literal, it's very material.
And how can you, like, I'm not sure what argument you could make to make sense of that, to say, like, this is something that absolutely a university should be doing. I don't think that you can make an argument for that.
I believe the argument is that it's a good investment, it has a big return for the university, but there's an ethical question here. Is it just to make profit and be a big university and a renowned university at the expense of human rights and killing people? So that's,
aside from capitalism, like, there's the argument in favor of it is purely capitalistic.
But I think it's immoral. It's not
it is.
Capitalistic.
Yeah. It's scary. I just, like, I can't... It's, like, scary to see that there's... I mean, and that's the reality of the world, but that we're prioritizing the gain of money and the gain of, like, capital and gain and investment over, I don't know, I can't, like, wrap my head around why education, like, systems are choosing to stay in these investments when there's direct ties to, like, they can, I don't know, there's direct ways that they can, like, agree with what their students are trying to say. And, like, mm-hmm. you know, this is a very easy thing to do. I don't see why investing in the things that are used to kill or is necessary. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have to point out, too, is that a lot of Jewish people are standing with us and saying not mm-hmm. in our name. So we're going to play an extract of...
First we'll hear something that goes along that the lines of not in our name, and then we'll hear some audio from the encampment and a reading out by one of the protesters of a list of demands. So stay tuned, keep it locked to CKUT 90.3 FM, CKUT.ca on the web.
Wrong kind of Jew that the media and politicians don't want you to know exist, but there are thousands of us and we're here saying not in our name. When you see the coverage of all these demonstrations and things, you get the impression that no Jews are involved, that Jews are fearful, Jews hate what's going on. No, it's not true. There's hundreds of us here today. There've been thousands of Jews in this country alone taking the side of the Palestinians against the Israeli state. All over the world, there must be hundreds of thousands of Jewish people who are now saying, not in my name. One of the most ridiculous things that we've had to deal with, particularly in the last week or so, is the idea that the police are enforcing a no-go zone for Jews in order to defend all these hate marchers, people who are supporters of terrorism. It's almost the reversal of the truth. We are saying, along with most sensible people around the world, that everybody, Palestinians included, deserve to be free wherever they live, including between the River Jordan and the Mediterranean Sea. People say, but as a Jew, are you not frightened? Are you not subjected to assaults and threats and abuse? And I say, well, actually, I do feel threatened, abused, negated, silenced, cancelled, because when it comes to the media seeking Jewish opinion about what's going on, they go to the Board of Deputies of British Jews or the Chief Rabbi or the Jewish Labour Movement or, heaven forfend, the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism. All these groups which have support for Israel sort of ingrained in their whole agenda and their whole raison d'etre. If there is hatred and abuse directed at Jews, it's often coming from people of the Zionist perspective against anti-Zionist Jews like me. People need to take on board the fact that there are elders in the Jewish community, many of them are Holocaust survivors and also the descendants of Holocaust survivors, who have been present on these demonstrations, given fantastic interviews themselves, explaining why, as victims of a past genocide, they will not tolerate an ongoing genocide that the world is witnessing in real time. It is so dangerous and divisive the way this so-called conflict has been portrayed, taking the Israeli line, calling it the Israel-Hamas war, when this is clearly a war against the entire Palestinian people, collective punishment, ethnic cleansing, plausible genocide. And there is nothing religious about this war. It is a war of settler colonialism against an occupied people. One of the little rays of hope in the current situation, and it's getting bigger, it's getting wider, it's getting brighter, is the growth of opposition to what Israel is doing. And it's happening across the world, and it's happening among swathes of young people. Look at what's happening in American campuses. And of course, among the many young people who are coming out and saying not in our name and we won't tolerate it and trying to shut down arms factories and calling for an arms embargo are many, many young Jewish people. I've met a youngster today who's never been on a demonstration before. He's got family in Israel, and gradually he's managed to sort of feel empowered enough, feel confident enough that he has to come and speak out alongside all these other people who are demonstrating for just peace and justice, really. It's not rocket science, is it? Over the last few weeks and months, we have seen once again that our media, by and large, takes the side of the oppressor against the oppressed. So if you want to read and see information, views from people who are on the right side of history, then please support Double Down News on Patreon. Thank you. I'm the wrong kind of Jew.
Yeah, my name's Farah.
So yeah, if you can just tell me a bit about the encampment and how it's been these last few days.
It's been pretty calm from the outside, but the energy inside the encampment is incredible. People are enthusiastic. People feel strength in their community. People feel heard. And people are working together consistently to find the right solution for any problem that comes up. Honestly, like, it's been incredible in there. Yeah, it's really inspiring to see.
And then, yeah, I just wanted to know if you could tell me a bit about the demands of the encampment.
Yeah, absolutely. The students that are making the demands come from multiple different universities. So there are students from McGill, there are students from Concordia, as well as other universities. But these demands come specifically from McGill and Concordia. The first demand is that we demand full financial transparency from the Concordia Investments Committee and the Board of Governors to disclose all investments in companies complicit in the genocide of the Palestinian people. We also demand that Concordia and McGill universities divest from all complicit companies and cut all academic ties with Israeli institutions. We demand that no repercussions or disciplinary charges for any actions taken by students of McGill and Concordia University in support of Palestine. We also want that any pending disciplinary charges against students related to support for Palestinian activism should be dropped. We demand that McGill and Concordia universities publish a statement immediately condemning the ongoing genocide against the Palestinian people and calling on the Canadian government to immediately cease all military contracts with the Zionist state. And we ask the community to come support us, as well as faculty, staff, and other students.
Great. Thank you so much for your
time. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, I was here over the weekend on each day. Different sort of amounts of the day, so I was here a bit longer on the first day just because I think there was a lot of like feeling of energy of just wanting to make sure that it like started okay. Once people got the call out, like I think there was an urgency there, and there's just a lot of like setting up that had to happen. And then I feel like the second day it felt like a little bit more, at least for when I was there, it felt a little bit more calm. Like I came in the evening or like later afternoon, and it seemed like there was a Seder happening. There was, you know, there's all these like events going on where people are doing like teach-ins, and honestly, it was like really beautiful yesterday. I think the atmosphere was like, I don't know, maybe I'm self-conscious because they're recording, so like I won't find the right word, but yeah. And then it just keeps shifting and evolving. Like I think people are kind of trying to just assess like what's going on constantly, honestly, like because it's obviously so new, and even if there's like other campuses that are experiencing similar things, it's in different contexts, so we're trying to evaluate like what's going on here right now.
And how do you feel like, yeah, it's like, because earlier you were just saying that like there's a lot more media presence, like what's the vibe kind of,
yeah,
like today?
Yeah, I guess today it feels like a little bit more of like engagement from media for sure. Maybe some like, I haven't been here that long today, so I don't know, but I'm guessing like people that work the 9-to-5 that are sort of incorporating this into their work in other ways, like if they're like political officials or anything like that, or like politicians that are trying to get, you know, PR.
My name is Rula Jordi, and I'm a professor of Islamic history here at McGill. And I am one of many professors who stand in solidarity with our students at McGill and Concordia in their encampment for the second day today, in order to denounce the complicitness of the two administrations in the genocide against the Palestinians due to the partnerships, the investments, the exchange, the academic and the economic, between Israeli institutions and the McGill administrations. And so they are raising their voices to say no more. We will not allow this to happen. We demand that our spaces, our educational spaces, be completely dissociated from anything that have to do with the Zionist Israeli state. And they ask for boycotting and divesting, specifically to divest. Now, we are talking here.
There's no pressure.
Yeah. So we are talking here about a very deep involvement. If you look at very different departments in both Concordia and McGill, you will see the extent of it. This is not a verbal, this is not rhetorical, this is actual, real complicitness. And after the genocide that, killed 34,000 Palestinians, 17,000 and more, around 20,000 being children and also women, we cannot accept the continuation of this complicitness. There's a very important aspect to this stand today, which is the scholasticide that had taken place in Gaza. The leveling down of universities, students who wanted to graduate, their lives are on hold, their dreams are destroyed, aside from the thousands who lost their lives, students. And so with the destruction of universities, the mass starvation that they are facing now, the collective punishment, the ethnic cleansing, we say no. We say no, and we raise our voices that McGill has to divest, and they have to fulfill this. They have done it with the apartheid in South Africa, and they can do it again if they want to.
My name is Natalie Corito. I'm an associate professor of feminism and sexuality at the Simone de Beauvoir Institute at Concordia University.
So we're here at the encampment. Can you tell me a bit about the atmosphere, what it's like?
Yeah, the atmosphere of the encampment is really great. There's a strong sense of collective support and joy for one another and the shared commitment that people have to seeing an end to this genocide in Gaza. People are really moved by the number of people who've come out and the care and attention that they've given to this cause and to support the students who've put themselves on the line by starting up this encampment and really putting pressure on our institutions, our universities, as well as our governments and society as a whole to divest from war.
And then the last thing that I wanted to ask you is about like the discourse of safety on campus and how that's been mobilized by the university recently, but also these last many months.
Yeah. I mean, this is actually a question that I have a lot of concern around in terms of not just on our specific campuses like McGill or Concordia campus where I teach, but at a national level. So I'm not sure if you know this, but there's a House of Commons Standing Committee on Justice and Human Rights hearing series that starts, a set of hearings that will start this week, actually, on Thursday, that will try and gather evidence and information on this question of safety on campuses, with a focus on investigating anti-Semitism and Islamophobia on university campuses in Canada and more broadly in Canadian society. And the thing that I find really concerning about this is that the language of safety is really being weaponized here. So whose safety are we talking about? Who's meant to feel safe? And whether or not feeling safe actually has anything to do with being safe, like being safe from violence. So I think that we need to really think carefully about like what we mean when we say feeling safe or unsafe. Does it mean like feeling uncomfortable, or does it mean actually being unsafe from exposure to forms of violence and harm? So these are some of the questions that I think that we're grappling with in higher education that are seeping into the kind of larger national discourse. And it's not coming out of nowhere. There's like a real effort to try and accuse people who are supporters of Palestine of creating an unsafe environment. And the reality is that what creates an unsafe environment is a society that profits off of war, that perpetuates war, that advances war, that encourages state violence and exercises state violence. So if we want to think about actually the things that make people unsafe in our society, what makes people unsafe are weapons and war and militarization, not people articulating criticism in the form of protest and dissent and debate in our society.
Great. Thank you so much.
Welcome back. You're listening to CKUT 90.3, CKUT.ca on the web. It's 5:45 on Monday, April 29th, 2024, and you are listening to Off the Hour, where we are sharing live updates about the situation on McGill campus with the Popular University encampment that is in protest of
Montreal University's investment in and complicity with the genocide in Palestine.
And apart from what's going on campuses, we also have other organizations, namely the organization with Raymond Legault. We have known Raymond. On a bien connu Raymond durant la guerre en Irak. Et maintenant, Raymond fait partie d'une nouvelle organisation pour la Palestine. Raymond Legault, bienvenue à notre émission et merci beaucoup d'être avec nous. Donc, je voudrais vous demander de nous parler un peu de cette organisation, comme vous avez quand même un historique d'activisme politique. Maintenant, l'urgence, c'est pour la Palestine.
Oui, ben d'abord, merci de m'avoir invité à l'émission. La nouvelle organisation s'appelle Coalition du Québec Urgence Palestine. Elle s'est mise en place il y a peut-être environ sept semaines. Les objectifs de cette coalition-là, bien évidemment, c'est de dénoncer le génocide qui est en cours à Gaza et la complicité canadienne dans ce génocide. Mais l'objectif qu'on s'est donné plus particulièrement, c'est d'essayer de rendre davantage visible dans les grands médias le mouvement d'opposition justement au génocide et à la complicité canadienne. C'est parce que il y a depuis presque 7 mois maintenant une très grande quantité d'actions qui sont entreprises par toutes sortes de groupes dans la société civile, des groupes sur les campus étudiants, mais aussi des groupes dans les quartiers, dans plusieurs villes au Québec. Mais les médias ont généralement accordé très peu d'attention à ce que ces groupes-là font. Et donc, il y a une bonne partie de la population qui n'est même pas consciente qu'il existe ce mouvement d'opposition-là et qui est un mouvement, je dirais quand même, historique par son ampleur dans les activités en soutien à la Palestine depuis des années. On n'a pas rien vu d'une telle intensité et d'une telle ampleur, mais ça passe sous le radar médiatique. Je pense pas que c'est inconscient de leur part. Je pense que c'est tout à fait planifié. Il y a un certain nombre de médias alternatifs qui en parlent, mais avec un accès à un public moins grand. Donc, on s'est donné surtout ça comme objectif, de rendre ce mouvement-là visible.
Si j'ai bien compris, Raymond Legault, vous êtes aussi en dehors de Montréal, c'est-à-dire votre organisation va rejoindre d'autres régions au Québec. Est-ce que c'est le cas? Est-ce que j'ai bien compris?
Oui, non, c'est tout à fait le cas, vous avez raison. La coalition a tenu 2 réunions jusqu'à maintenant, donc c'est pas quelque chose qui est très consolidé. Et il y a 46 organisations qui ont participé à une ou l'autre ou aux deux réunions. Ces organisations-là sont des organisations en bonne partie de la région de Montréal, mais pas seulement. Bon, d'une part, il y a des groupes régionaux. Par exemple, des groupes de Rimouski, des groupes de Trois-Rivières, des groupes de la région de Lanaudière, il y a un groupe du Bas-Saint-Laurent et il y a un groupe de Québec. Donc, il y a des groupes dans différentes régions, mais il y a aussi des organisations qui ne sont pas strictement de Montréal, donc des organisations qui sont pan-québécoises. Je pense à l'Association québécoise des organismes de coopération internationale, la coordination du Québec pour la marche mondiale des femmes, des fédérations syndicales ou féministes comme la Fédération des femmes du Québec, la Fédération nationale des enseignantes et enseignants du Québec, la Fédération autonome de l'enseignement, la fédération qui regroupe les infirmières et infirmiers. Donc, c'est des organismes qui ont des membres dans tout le Québec et pas seulement à Montréal.
C'est très impressionnant. Je vous félicite et puis je suis tellement heureuse qu'on le mentionne ici sur les ondes de CKUT parce que effectivement les médias n'en parlent pas beaucoup et je sais que vous avez quand même publié dans les journaux, si vous voulez nous en toucher un mot, de ce que vous avez déjà publié et du nombre de signataires qui sont vraiment impressionnants.
Oui, en fait, c'est la première action qu'on a entreprise pour essayer de visibiliser l'étendue du mouvement en soutien à la Palestine. C'est de faire signer un appel à la mobilisation qui s'appelle Ensemble pour Gaza et la Palestine, Ensemble pour la justice et la paix. Alors cet appel-là à la mobilisation, en gros, dénonçait le génocide et dénonçait la complicité canadienne et exigeait un certain nombre de choses qu'on estimait être directement en lien avec le droit même à la vie du peuple palestinien, c'est-à-dire exiger un cessez-le-feu immédiat et la circulation libre de l'aide humanitaire dans la bande de Gaza, exiger l'arrêt des exportations militaires canadiennes directes et indirectes vers Israël et la levée du blocus de la bande de Gaza. Et au-delà des revendications immédiates, on identifiait l'occupation militaire d'Israël des territoires palestiniens occupés et la colonisation comme étant sous-jacent à ce qui se passe en ce moment et devant et à la source de toute la catastrophe actuelle. Il y a eu 237.
Au fait, Raymond Legault, avant d'aller aux signataires, j'aimerais souligner votre travail parce que il y a un problème de colonisation. Il ne s'agit pas seulement d'envoyer de l'aide humanitaire. C'est pas la charité que les Palestiniens veulent. Ils veulent l'autodétermination. Donc il y a un grand enjeu politique et je suis tellement heureuse que vous le souligniez parce que quand on parle de il faut avoir un cessez-le-feu pour commencer, mais à part ça, il faut aussi regarder la situation politique, le déni dont souffrent les Palestiniens de tous leurs droits, que ce soit politique ou de droits humains ou de droits civils. Alors justement, le nombre de signataires qui ont appuyé vos revendications.
Oui, il y a 237 organisations de tout le Québec qui ont endossé cet appel-là. Et ça, c'est vraiment à l'échelle de tout le territoire québécois. Donc, il y a beaucoup d'organismes de la région des régions de Lanaudière, des Laurentides, de la Montérégie, de la région de Québec, du Bas-Saint-Laurent, en Estrie, centre du Québec, Abitibi-Témiscamingue, Côte-Nord, Saguenay-Lac-Saint-Jean, à peu près toutes les régions du Québec, je pense les avoir nommées en grande partie là, sont largement représentées parmi les signataires. Il y a des organisations syndicales, pas seulement les grandes organisations syndicales, mais il y a des grandes organisations syndicales comme la CSN, comme centrale syndicale, la CSD, comme centrale syndicale, qui ont signé cet appel-là à la mobilisation. Mais dans tout le Québec, des conseils centraux de différentes régions, des organisations de femmes de différentes régions, toutes sortes d'organisations communautaires, collectifs contre la pauvreté, de tous les horizons. Il y a aussi plus que 130 personnalités publiques, des acteurs, des actrices connues, des auteurs de théâtre, de littérature, des vedettes de télévision, etc. Il y a beaucoup de gens qui ont, si on veut, prêté leur nom ou ajouté leur nom comme personnalité publique, des gens qui sont au niveau des universités aussi, des gens qui ont publié toutes sortes d'ouvrages. Donc, oui. À ce niveau-là, je dirais que c'est ce qui nous a permis même de faire publier l'appel dans les journaux. Parce que c'est même pas suffisant en ce moment sur la question palestinienne de payer pour avoir de l'espace. On a payé pour avoir une pleine page dans Le Devoir pour publier l'appel et la liste des signataires. Et la même chose dans le Journal de Montréal. Et dans le Journal de Montréal avait d'abord refusé de publier l'appel. Et ils n'ont accepté qu'une fois qu'ils ont pris connaissance de l'ampleur du soutien qu'il y avait à cette déclaration-là. Donc, quand on pense que dans les médias, on a un certain intérêt à montrer une diversité de points de vue, ça remet beaucoup ça en question, parce que même quand on paye pour avoir l'espace, il y a des points de vue qu'on ne semble pas vouloir accueillir. Et même dans le cas du devoir, on sait que ça s'est retrouvé sur le bureau du directeur et que ça a pris un certain temps avant qu'on reçoive un oui définitif sur la question. Donc, c'est pour montrer aussi toute l'ampleur là, des problèmes que ça peut rencontrer d'avoir un écho réel dans les médias.
Oui, il semblerait qu'il y ait vraiment un fossé entre ce que les gens pensent et puis au niveau politique ou bien au niveau du establishment, ce que les autres avancent. Donc, et c'est la première fois que je vois cette dissension entre les deux groupes, et c'est pour ça, ça fait toute la valeur de ce que vous faites et ce que vous représentez. Maintenant, quand on revient aux politiques, parce qu'on n'a pas beaucoup de temps et je voudrais quand même citer cela, vous vous opposez à l'idée d'ouvrir un bureau du Québec à Tel Aviv. J'aimerais que vous en mentionniez vos arguments, pourquoi vous êtes contre.
Oui, ben en fait, ça s'inscrit dans une opposition plus large à la complicité du Canada et du Québec, non seulement avec le génocide en cours en ce moment, mais avec l'ensemble des violations du droit international qui ont été commises par Israël depuis des décennies. Tantôt, on parlait de colonisation, on parlait de l'occupation militaire, et donc... Le Canada s'est généralement contenté de phrases creuses disant que telle chose n'était pas très favorable à une solution, que la colonisation était un obstacle à un règlement juste et durable, mais n'ont jamais rien voulu poser comme action contre Israël. Alors, les actions que le Canada pose dans d'autres situations où les violations des droits sont même beaucoup moins importantes et significatives, il ne les pose même pas dans le cas de ce qui se passe en Israël, dans les territoires palestiniens occupés en ce moment, alors que ça commanderait de poser des gestes encore plus significatifs.
Absolument. Merci beaucoup, Raymond Legault. Je vous félicite pour votre travail. Bonne continuation et j'espère que nous pourrons avoir une autre entrevue avec vous dans les semaines prochaines. On continue à militer, on continue à s'exprimer et nous remercions CKUT pour nous donner cette possibilité. Merci.
Merci à vous.
Thank you, Raymond. We're going to bring it back into the studio right now. We have just a couple of minutes left in the hour, so we're going to talk about what's currently happening in the encampment. Again, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, CKUT.ca on the web. We are talking about the Popular University encampment that is happening right now on McGill campus. We've been receiving a lot of word over the last little while that there may be an injunction against the encampment, that there may be a call to dismantle it. Our word from the encampment right now is that things are still pretty calm there. And so we were just going to talk a little bit about what that injunction means and what we can expect in the coming days. We have about 90 seconds left, so let's make it quick.
So yeah, as we said at the top of the hour, Radio-Canada was reporting that there was a provisional injunction deposited at the Palais du Congrès. The specific legalities of that, whether it's a private injunction, whether it's a I don't know if the opposite of the public injunction, private would be that like an individual has called for this. There's some word kind of in different group chats about that. The specifics aren't very clear. I think it's still like being processed. But from past experience, from other uses of injunction, we know that an injunction means that then the police have the authority like to clear a space. So if they are given the injunction, they would be kind of legally permitted to clear the space. And if that is later deemed illegal or later deemed like not the right application of the injunction, that's something that'll be dealt with later on. But a provisional is kind of like an emergency injunction. So we're hoping right now, I believe there's no police presence or no significant police presence, so we're hoping it stays that way and that, kind of stays stable and peaceful as it has been the last few days.
Yeah, and I think what we would ask for people is to keep updated, follow CKUT, follow the social media of the groups that are involved in the encampment, and when the call goes out for community support, to show up, because the more people there are there, the less chance there is of police and other institutional violence. So
Stay tuned, keep it locked, and show up when you can. And thanks, everyone. That's us signing off. Because the more people there are there, the less chance there is of police and other institutional violence. So stay tuned, keep it locked, and show up when you can. And thanks, everyone. That's us signing off.
And there's also no Wi-Fi, but we're back. We're better than ever. And yeah, I'm really excited to get on with this broadcast. So my goal of today is to explore how music and poetry have intersected and evolved together over time, specifically as a tool of resistance in Palestine. And a little bit of background about what I'm going to be doing and what I'm aiming to accomplish in this hour that we have together. I'm a student at McGill, and this semester I'm in a wonderful course called Poetics and Politics in Arabic Literature with Professor Michelle Hartman, shout out. And it's specifically on Gaza. It's just been such a transformative experience, and I've definitely been enriched in so many ways. For one, I feel like I'm not scared of poetry anymore. I'm definitely still a little scared of Shakespeare, but, you know, in the greater context of things, I think being able to hear the stories of people in a context that I feel is so important to grasp really changed the way I view literature and the creation of it. We cannot forget Palestine or Gaza, and the more that we listen and read and spread the lives, the more Gaza lives on. I feel super blessed with the opportunity to study and speak about Palestine in an academic setting. In this class, we read poetry from Gaza specifically, both of the past and